The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. He is heading back to the UK from the US today. I don't know whether he's quite made it to Edstone yet, but he should be back with us very soon. Well, we've got a lot, as usual, of different news pieces to get to. I want to start with a bit of an update on some of the coronavirus restrictions. It leads in a little bit to some of the things I'll talk about in more detail later. But Wales over here in the UK, they've gone into full lockdown now. There's the second wave, quote unquote, in Wales peaked with a total of 11 deaths. Now the deaths are back down into the single digits. Obviously, any death is a tragedy, but the level is now so low that it's hard to even know if they are due to coronavirus at all. But they're shutting down the entire nation for 2 weeks. And of course, a lot of these two-week lockdowns end up lasting much, much longer. But what you're seeing over here is just appalling deceit by the media, backed by the government. For example, you're seeing headlines like hospitals full with corona patients. And well, what picture does that paint? You kind of think of a hospital with no room left. Absolutely hundreds of beds full with hundreds of people in there with coronavirus. Then you look at the reality and it's the hospital has about 750 beds. Eight of these they've set aside for coronavirus patients and they're full. Headline should really be eight people in hospital with corona. There was another headline. You had a lot of articles talking about how the hospitals are being overwhelmed. There was quite a few in particular that talked about one particular hospital that was 82% capacity, 82% full. Look, it's nearly full with the coronavirus. What the articles didn't mention is that this time last year, it was 83% full. This is what happens when you have free healthcare. The hospitals fill up over winter. All the time, coronavirus or no coronavirus. So you've basically had selective reporting, lying with statistics. And it's shutting down more and more of the country, spreading fear. And people support the lockdowns because they see these kind of headlines. They're left with the impression that there are hundreds of people in each hospital with coronavirus when the answer is it's just eight. You know, that's the power of the media, and that's the danger with the deceit that comes to the media. And that's something, you know, this is causing billions of pounds, billions of dollars of damage. But it's doing a lot more with, the power of the media can cause even bigger damage. So I wanted to talk some more about some US news. With the election coming up, but with a dimension to that news and to that election that you may not have considered before. You're having a lot of stories now about people getting really worried about post-election violence within the US. Lots of fear about this. There's a chain of survival camps they're going to open for the first time ever. This is the first time this particular chain has opened up for their members to come and hide out. And they're opening because of fears of election violence. Fortitude Ranch, they have camps in West Virginia and Colorado. And they sent out a letter to their members saying that they're going to open starting November 3rd because they expect possible looting and violence that could devolve into long-term widespread clashes. Their CEO sent out an email. This will be the first time we've opened for a collapse disaster, though it may end up not being so. We consider the risk of violence that could escalate in irrational, unpredictable ways into widespread loss of law and order is real. And here, members pay an annual fee of around $1,000. For these camps, and in return they can use them as a holiday camp, or they can use them as a place to shelter in time of collapse. So they're opening up, and there's a whole bunch of surveys showing how worried people are about the situation in the United States. There's one survey, 61% said they thought America is nearing a second civil war. 41% said they strongly agreed that America is nearing a second civil war. 41%. That same survey found that 52% were actively stockpiling now and preparing food and other essential goods. And it wasn't just because of violence. A lot of that was due to fear of a resurgence of coronavirus. But most Americans, at least according to that survey, stockpiling because they're fearing for their country. Then YouGov, another survey, 55% of registered voters said they thought violence would increase in the U.S. following the November 3rd presidential election. Only 11% said they didn't expect a rise in violence. And then 33% said that they were unsure. And this article, I think it was from The Hill, they went through and they were interviewing some people. They spoke to one individual who said, well, I went to my parents in New Jersey for about 2 weeks when the BLM protests got bad and looting started. So I definitely want to get out of here the week of the election. I'm thinking if Trump wins, continuing this quote, it's going to be a disaster. The city will be on fire. People are going to go nuts. This is what people are worried about in a lot of these places. Voice of America News, they had an article, U.S. states brace for possible violence on election day. And well, this article says officials across the United States already charged with securing the upcoming presidential elections are taking additional precautions, bracing for the possibility that November 3rd and the days that followed could be marred not just by potential cyber attacks, but by violence. The boldest and perhaps starkest warnings are not coming from federal authorities, but from state officials, some of whom say foreign disinformation campaigns could fuel a range of problems, from minor disturbances to something much more severe. So, you've got different election officials starting to get worried. This article quotes officials from the New Jersey Department for Homeland Security and Preparedness. They put out a threat assessment a few weeks ago saying election results, delays, and recounts could result in protests and attempts to occupy election offices. Incidents of civil unrest resulting in riots, violent acts, and fatalities will converge with election uncertainty, producing confrontations between protesters and counter-demonstrators challenging election outcomes. That's what this is saying. So well, I'll just read another one. The New York Post. New Yorkers are on edge after a leaked NYPD memo obtained by the Post revealed this week that police are preparing for protests to begin as early as October 25th and to grow in intensity into the next year. And it talked about how officers need to be prepared for deployment. It says this November 3rd will be one of the most highly contested presidential elections in the modern era. There is a strong likelihood the winner of the presidential election may not be declared for several weeks. So they're all getting ready for a lot of these authorities. They're getting ready for a delayed election result, contested election result, and potential violence. PJ Media, they had an article just over the weekend. How close are we to civil war? War correspondent in Portland, talking about a foreign war correspondent that had come over to look at, well, what's it like in Portland? Are we going to, this particular individual, you know, he looked at civil wars and civil unrest in lots of different countries. Well, here he comes now into Portland to have a look. Well, is America heading to the civil war? And it's not just the U.S. This is an article from Al Monitor talking about the Middle East. It says, is Israel heading towards civil war? So the same kind of undercurrents of division that we're seeing in the United States, we're seeing in Israel and the Middle East as well. Now, this article is pretty anti-Benjamin Netanyahu, but it's absolutely right that there is an unprecedented level of division in Israel and the Middle East, too. The article says the despair on the warring sides is growing. The police are employing increasingly violent tactics to control the protests. It will only take one spark to set off the barrel of dynamite threatening the streets. And it says, Israel is still far from a real civil war, but the distance is growing shorter with every passing day. So you've got all of this potential for violence in America, in Israel, in the Middle East. You've got a high level of division and dissatisfaction here within the UK as well. Yesterday, you had the Supreme Court ruling on an important postal voting case where there was a 4-4 split because, of course, the Supreme Court isn't up to its usual 9 on a ruling from Pennsylvania's highest court that gives the state more time for accepting mail-in ballots, as he does, it seems like, all the time now on divisive cases. The Chief Justice John Roberts, he joined the court's 3 liberal members, while the four conservative members, they wanted to overturn this Pennsylvania court ruling, but Chief Justice Roberts, he voted to keep it the same. So what this ruling, well, what happened here is, Pennsylvania law, and even some of the Constitution says, well, only the Pennsylvania legislature can change when the deadline for postal ballots to be in. And they've passed a law and it says that all ballots can be counted if they were received by 8 p.m. on the day of the election. And then last month, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court came along and said, well, there's the possibility for postal delays and we could have a lot more people voting. So they extended the deadline by 3 days. And said, okay, well, it's no longer 8 p.m. On this particular day. It's 3 days later. And they also said, well, if ballots don't have a postmark or if the postmark is illegible or something like that, they can still be counted. And the argument was, well, people shouldn't be... If the post office makes a mistake on the person's ballot, the person casting that ballot, well, they shouldn't be penalized for that. It's not their fault that the post office didn't stamp it. But now you've got the situation where they're counting ballots that come in for up to 3 days after the election. There's no need for a postmark. You could have ballots coming in, being sent in after the election even takes place, potentially. So the Republicans or the right-leaning members of the Supreme Court, they argued, well, no, Pennsylvania law says that only the state legislature can set the election date. Therefore, November 3rd should stand as the date. And then the liberal members of the court said, well, no, we're going to go with what the Pennsylvania court decided and then pushing that date back. So that's just one state. It's an important battleground state, I guess. But you could see that now potentially having an impact on other states, on other courts, pushing back deadlines, pushing back. When are we going to stop counting these votes? On what exact votes are we going to count? And it really does, you can see the door open, wide open now for a lot of contested elections where you have a whole lot of court cases. Okay, well, this court made this decision. We'll take it up to the Supreme Court. Were they allowed to do that? And this being litigated out in a whole load of different states. And part of the reason why this is happening is you're seeing so many postal votes being sent in the June primary, for example. The Pennsylvania officials, they were expecting to receive 80,000 to 100,000 mail-in ballots. They got 1.8 million. So you're looking at 20 times more than they were expecting. Massive ramp up in the number of postal votes. And that, of course, that led some of this discussion of do we need extra time to count and some of these other things. But you can see how this is, how you could have a lot of court cases. And this is ramping up in a lot of other states as well. Just for example, Michigan, Target Smart has been putting out some analysis of different times, different kinds of voting there. Back in 2016, you had about 250,000 people sending in postal votes, and they're expecting 1.4 million for 2020. Or that's their estimate for me. I think for even how many have already been cast. So massive increase in postal voting, and so really an unprecedented situation. So you have a very real prospect of a dragged out election. You've seen this from the left-wing commentators Well, we might not know till a month, till 2 months out from the election, who's going to be, who's going to have won. I think that was the New York Times saying that. So one important aspect of the story that I want to talk about that I haven't seen really at all in the US press, but is absolutely critical and one of the most important aspects of this story from a Bible prophecy perspective, is how is the rest of the world going to respond to this? How are other countries around the world going to respond to this situation? Because there are big implications for America. This is an article that was published just a few days ago in Der Spiegel, Germany's biggest, most popular, most important news magazine. What if Donald Trump won't go? Europe preparing for the worst in Washington. And that article says, concern is growing in the European Union that Donald Trump might refuse to recognize the election results if he loses. Preparations are underway for the worst case scenario. And really here, what Spiegel is getting at, what Europe is kind of getting ready for, is getting ready to get involved in the US election. And in that process of what potentially a challenged election and counts going on for time afterwards and people disputing this in courts, Europe is getting ready to get involved in that too. You know, what if the media, we talked about the deceit that you're seeing in the media when it comes to some of these coronavirus cases. Well, what if and the power that they hold there, what if the media start saying, well, Biden won. The Trump campaign is trying to steal the election, but the winner is Joe Biden. What if the media start to say that? Well, you could see Europe getting on board with exactly what the media are saying, what the Democrats are saying. And this article is talking about how Europe is looking at, well, this is what we're going to do in those circumstances. This article says a horror scenario is making the rounds these days in both Berlin and Brussels. So they're talking about this in Germany and at the EU headquarters. Should the outcome of the US presidential election on November 3rd be close, incumbent Donald Trump could declare himself the winner when polls close, even if he's behind in the vote count. He could prematurely and unlawfully claim the presidency. So a very similar language to what you've been seeing coming from the left all summer. You know, Hillary Clinton saying, well, don't concede under any circumstances, no matter what the result is on the end of election night, I would tell the Biden campaign, don't concede. Well, in Europe's really saying, well, what if President Trump claims to have won before the court cases are finished? Before we've given all of this extra time for mail-in votes to come in. This article goes on to say, what happens if Donald Trump simply refuses to leave the White House? Even if he loses the election. Should that happen, the stability of democracy in the United States would be put to the test. It would even call into question the future of democracy as a form of government. And then it also says, in background discussions, politicians and diplomats have made it clear they see such a third scenario or this scenario as a very real possibility. They're talking about this in Europe at the moment. Diplomats, politicians, they're getting together. They're having meetings. And they're talking about, well, what are we going to do in the US election this year and its aftermath? Peter Bayer, he's in Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democratic Union. He's the German government's transatlantic coordinator. So he is a mainstream figure. He's not a fringe figure in German politics. He's part of Angela Merkel's party. He's responsible for relations with the United States. He said, I am aware of the danger that should the results of the election be close, Trump could declare victory prematurely and the U.S. could find itself in a constitutional crisis. And he said that everyone needs to think about what this scenario. Years ago, such a thing was inconceivable. And he said, we in Germany and Europe have to prepare. So we need to prepare. Europe needs to get their response ready. They also have some quotes from Elmar Brok. He's in the European Parliament, but he's a longtime member with the Christian Democratic Union and another senior member of Angela Merkel's party. And this article said, would the EU, this is the Spiegel writing, would the EU then dare to declare Trump's presence in the White House illegitimate, as it did most recently following Alexander Lukashenko's claim to power in Belarus? And Elmar Brok said, if it is blatant, the EU would have to take a position. It couldn't act differently than it does in other instances. So he's saying, well, we need to, if we don't like the election result, if potentially the radical left and the mainstream media claim to have won, well, maybe we need to refuse to recognize Donald Trump as U.S. president. That's basically what he's saying. Maybe we should recognize Joe Biden as the official president. It also goes on to quote Martin Sherdovan, the floor leader for the left party. Now, that is a fairly far left political party in Germany. It still does very well. It still polls often as high as 20% sometimes. But it is, I mean, it's kind of astonishing that such a far left party does so well. But this is not a mainstream position. But still, it's worth listening to what this individual is saying, because it does represent a strong view of a lot of people within Germany. This individual, he's calling for the EU to send in election observers. The article says, just as the bloc most recently did for the vote in Nigeria. So this is what Germany is and Europe is saying. We need to treat America the same way that we treat Nigeria. The same way we need to treat these countries where they don't really we're not really sure if their democracy is particularly functional. They haven't been democracies for very long. We want to send in people to make sure the election is free and fair. We need to treat America like that. We need to treat America like they're basically a third world country. This is the way that the division in the United States and the narrative that is being pushed by the left in the United States, this is how that is being used by the European Union. They're taking a hold of what the media are doing, what the radical left are doing, and using that to paint America as some kind of third world despotic state, as some kind of banana republic. This individual said, the EU must push the US government and also state governments to allow neutral EU election observers. And he wrote that in a letter to the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. Now, it doesn't seem likely they would, you know, the US would have to say yes for that to happen. And it's such an absurd request. I have a hard time seeing that happening. But this left party politician continues, there are many indications that Trump will try to manipulate the election results or won't recognize a loss. If the EU is serious about its appeals for democracy and multilateralism, then the only choice it has is to send in election observers. Now, the EU really does support Joe Biden. You can look at, I saw a graphic, I should have given it to the guys over in the booth there, but I didn't. Showing the level of support in opinion polls for Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. Now, I'm sure they're polls. You know, the polls, I think, have major problems in recent years. There's a lot in there of polls exaggerating support for the left, and you know all this. So consider that caveat, that there's an asterisk there. But still, Germany, 11% said they wanted President Trump to win the election, compared to 71% saying they supported Joe Biden. Overwhelming. And it's like that almost all across Europe. Even the UK, where I think there is more and more. You've got to understand, for those of us outside America, it's very easy for people. We don't pay a huge amount of attention to American politics, certainly not as much as people in America do. And it's very easy just to treat CNN as the gospel truth. And I think that's what a lot of people do. And when it's not your country, you're not motivated to go and do the digging and to see if this is right. You're not kind of confronted with some of those events that prove it false. So that's part of the reason for these polls. But even in the UK, polls say only 13% support President Trump. And 61% for Biden. And like I said, I think some more and more are waking up that a Biden presidency would be very bad for Britain. But that's what some of the polls have been saying. And then you could look all across Europe. And there are some exceptions. I think maybe Poland and some of these Eastern European countries where President Trump has been standing up to Russia, standing up to what Germany's doing in cooperation with Russia, that has won him a lot of support. But in general, there's this overwhelming support for Joe Biden. And this Spiegel article went on to talk about how basically the EU is making decisions with the US election in mind. They don't want to support President Trump or help him in any way in the elections. So this article says the EU is holding back on trade policy to avoid making any move that could help Mr. Trump. And basically the WTO has approved, they've given the EU permission to put tariffs on American goods. I think Europe loves the idea, but they don't want to do it because of the election. It says some EU member states, particularly Germany, are urging patience. They are concerned that Trump could take advantage of such punitive tariffs in the final days of the campaign. Diplomats say they want to avoid giving Trump such a gift at all costs. That's Europe's position on the election. We want to avoid helping President Trump at all costs. That's our number one priority. You see the same thing from the Vatican. You saw it a few weeks ago where Mike Pompeo went to Rome and he wanted to have this. He was trying to lobby the Vatican against doing a deal with communist China, with all of its dictatorial and very disturbing things that it's doing over there. And so he went and he wanted to have a meeting on persecuted Christians, things like that. The Vatican said, no, we're not going to do anything that could indicate we support the Trump campaign or that could be interpreted as that. We're not going to meet with you or anything like that. And then the Pope put out his letter just a few weeks ago, where the Washington Post, their headline when that letter was published, "The Pope's Unexpected Election Message." And this article, this commentator, well, they said that they talked about how it's going to make it hard, this Pope's letter, for conservative and right-wing Catholics to insist that the only Orthodox vote is for Trump. And so they were, people in the US were looking at this and saying, well, this is the Pope's election message. This is the Pope saying, vote for Joe Biden. Or at least don't support President Trump. And you can go through some of those, that letter, and it has some pretty obvious criticism at President Trump. The Pope Francis, in that letter, he's quoting himself in an earlier speech, and he condemns those who build a culture of walls, to raise tall walls in the heart, walls on land in order to prevent this encounter with other cultures and other peoples. And those who raise walls will end up as slaves within the very walls they have built. Now, which candidate could that be referring to in the US election? Who is the one that has been very publicly talking about building a wall to stop people from another country coming in on? And this article had a strong support for migrants, even allowing migrants in, or this letter from the Pope, for economic reasons. And so that was being seen by many as an endorsement of Joe Biden and a directive against voting for President Trump, at the same time that the Vatican was saying, when it was President Trump's people visiting, we don't want to do anything that could indicate we support one side or the other. So you're seeing Europe potentially getting ready to get involved in the US election or in the aftermath of the US election. But there's another important aspect of how foreign countries could respond. And there was a good article in the Financial Times that drew attention to this. Another danger of how foreign countries could respond to a disputed U.S. election. They had an article, "A Distracted U.S. is Dangerous for Taiwan." A distracted U.S. is dangerous for Taiwan. And this article talks about some dangers of what's going on in the election. "Less discussed is the danger that if China takes advantage of political confusion in the US to make a move on Taiwan, international affairs could be convulsed by a November or December surprise." It says the din of the American campaign is drowning out increasingly aggressive words and actions by China as it threatens to use military force to combat what it regards as intolerable separatism by Taiwan, which is de facto an independent state, but claimed by Beijing. So it's saying, well, everyone in America, they're all focused on the domestic news and the campaign there and everything that's going on in that country. But, there's an important reason to be focused on that. But that din is drowning out some important events, some important developments from China, where they're encroaching on Taiwan there. It says Chinese military planes regularly cross the median line between Taiwan and the mainland. Last week, a flight from Taiwan was prevented from reaching the Pratas Islands, a Taiwanese-controlled outpost. Aggressive rhetoric in the Chinese media is ramped up. It talks about the editor of the Global Times writing, "The only way forward is for the mainland to fully prepare itself for war." This is what the government-controlled press is saying in China right now. The historical point, turning point, is getting closer. So we need to prepare ourselves for war. China, that's what that's the Chinese government, basically, their mouthpiece. And this article goes on to say, "For decades, the threat of Chinese invasion of Taiwan has been held in check by the U.S. And then it says, but goes through some of that history, but it says, "Since then, however, China has engaged in a massive military buildup. And the U.S. is consumed by the most divisive presidential election campaign in living memory. Under these circumstances, the Chinese government may doubt continuing American support to Taiwan. Beijing's window of opportunity could look even more tempting after the U.S. has voted on November 3rd, particularly if the election result is disputed and the country is plunged into an political and constitutional crisis." So are there other countries around the world looking right now and saying, well, the U.S. could go into chaos in November after November 3rd. There could be this disputed election. You know, there's people in America preparing for election violence. There are some of these prepper groups preparing. There are people in New York moving out of state because they're worried about the possibility. But China's preparing too. Europe's preparing too. And they're preparing in a very different way. China is looking at that. They're not preparing to hunker down. They're looking at that and saying, well, what can we do while the U.S. is distracted? Even if it's just for 2 months. But if it's something that just consumes America's political focus in such a way that a disputed election would, well, could we invade Taiwan in that time? And an invasion of Taiwan, I mean, it would, the ramifications of that would go way beyond Taiwan. It would signal a collapse of trust in the United States by America's allies in the Pacific and potentially around the world. You know, send a clear message. You can't depend on America to protect you because when they're distracted, they're not going to do anything. So they're getting ready. Other powers around the world are getting ready for a disputed election. Now, I'm not saying that this election is definitely going to be close or disputed. It could be. There's definitely that potential there. But at the same time, it's perfectly consistent, I think, with some of the things that we've been seeing from the polls and even some of the early votes in mail-in voting. And even with Bible prophecy for President Trump to possibly win by a landslide, that could happen. And that could reduce the scope there for some kind of disputed election. And we don't know exactly what is going to happen. My main point is, look at the way that these countries are all sitting there waiting to take advantage of America's division. They're getting ready for that. And maybe that will come on November 4th. Maybe that won't. But that division that you see in the United States right now, that's not going anywhere. That isn't going to go away. If President Trump wins by a landslide, America is not suddenly going to become a harmonious, unified country where there's no threat of internal division and internal violence. And so these countries are looking at that and they're getting ready. And really, America's presence in the world is doing so much right now. You can look at Iran, for example. Yesterday, restrictions on them buying weapons expired. What's stopping them going on a shopping spree and buying a whole ton of dangerous weapons and completely destabilizing the Middle East? Well, the biggest thing holding them back from that is the United States telling other countries, you do deals with Iran, we'll put sanctions on your country, on your companies. Now, I'm sure Iran will have some big deals in the future. But that's America and President Trump, that's a massive restraint on Iran at the moment. America's putting America being a major force for stability in the world. And there are countries that want to take advantage of instability. They're getting ready for American instability so they can cause global instability. And then you've got the EU getting ready to get involved if the US descends into civil war, saying, well, if there's a problem, well, we need to do something. And this aspect of how other countries would respond to U.S. division, this is one of the most important aspects of this whole story on U.S. Division. This is what Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry wrote in his book, Great Again. He has a chapter in there, Where America's Race Riots Are Leading. And if you're looking at all this chaos in America, this potential for unrest, and you're thinking, well, where's it going to end? What's going to happen here? That is a fantastic chapter to read. Chapter 5 of Great Again, Where Are America's Race Riots are Leading. And he quotes Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 19 and 20, which says, if you be willing and obedient, you shall eat of the good of the land. But if you refuse and rebel, you shall be devoured with the sword, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. So these chapters, they talk about Isaiah chapter, you can go through Isaiah chapter 1, and it talks about, well, the head is sick, and it talks about the potential for internal division and violence. And Mr. Flurry writes, the rioters and violent protesters may think they will come out of this as the victors. But God says, no, your enemies from without, from outside, are going to exploit the division, violence, and anarchy within your nations. There won't be any winners from within the nation. That is what God is saying. Bible prophecies, Mr. Flurry writes, make clear that even worse and more violent protests and riots are going to erupt in American and British cities. This will fatally weaken the nation and lead to curses of a far greater magnitude. So the riots are going to be bad. You can look at some of these scriptures. You can look at Ezekiel chapter 7, for example, where Ezekiel has this, he goes through this dramatic acting out, where he shows one third of Americans' people, you know, of the modern descendants of ancient Israel. In our book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, proves that that's referring to America and Britain. It says, well, one third of those are going to die with pestilence. And you can look up what that means. And it's just talking about internal violence. I think I have quotes on that a bit later in my notes. If I do, we'll get to that in a bit more detail then. I'll read out those quotes directly instead of paraphrasing. So there's violence coming, but then Mr. Flurry says, well, it's going to fatally weaken the nation and lead to curses of an even greater magnitude. There's going to be an even bigger problem. You see that division, and America collapses with this division, and then other countries take advantage of that. Other countries get involved. He talked about this in A Key of David over the summer, about some of the riots as well. Well, we'll just listen to this. This is clip one from the Key of David. I think it was called, I can't remember the name, something about riots being prophesied that he gave over the summer. Clip one.
What happens if our policemen are gone? What happens? Well, that means chaos and anarchy, and that means everything just sort of falls apart. And I'll tell you, we have enemies out there, empire enemies, that have been waiting for decades and decades and decades for something like this to happen to America so they can destroy them. And we surely can see that. We have vicious enemies out there. And nobody in this country is going to be a winner in a civil war. I'll tell you that absolutely, and have all kinds of prophecies to back that up.
So that's where this is leading. That's where this riots are leading. That's what the Bible talks about. That you have a third die with some of these internal riots, and then America is besieged. Then you have another power comes in and starts to cut off the nation's food and water, and comes in and then invades or attacks the nation. And this internal division, it weakens the nation. And you can already see from the headlines, just from the last few days, other nations are circling. They're getting ready for that. They're looking at, well, what can we do in that position? Another important article that I mentioned in this context, this is from the cover of our July 2020 Trumpet print article by Mr. Brad McDonald, The Global Ambition to Destroy America and Its President. And that goes through all around the world, all of these different countries that really hate President Trump. And at the heart of that, really, they hate America. He says, the truth is a higher and much more evil and dangerous power is behind this welling hate for America. And he goes through some important prophecies that we've talked about, how America is under attack, how there is a hatred for America being stirred up. And we've talked a lot about that within America, but it's also being stirred up outside of America. And he goes through some of these things, and Mr. McDonald writes, when you consider the actions of Russia, China, Germany, France, and a host of other countries, organizations, and institutions, it raises the question, well, is the devil orchestrating a global campaign to destroy America? Is there a global campaign to destroy America? And then he talks about how the radical left, he has a whole section in this article about how the radical left that has been used to undermine America from within has all of these contacts with these outside organizations and these other countries that are also undermining and destroying America from without. And the way that they've often even been working against President Trump. You know, you have President Trump standing up to Iran. And then in February this year, you have a delegation of Democrats at the Munich Security Conference meeting with Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif without the approval or knowledge of the State Department. You have John Kerry, Mr. Obama's Secretary of State, meeting with Zarif, meeting with the Iranians, while President Trump is trying to put pressure on the Iranians. You have Hillary Clinton going and trying to encourage Britain to vote against Brexit while President Trump is supporting Brexit. You're seeing her and others try and get Britain to draw closer to the EU in its post-Brexit agreement. In 2017, you had Mr. Obama visiting Germany at the same time that President Trump visited Germany. Mr. Obama meeting with Angela Merkel just before President Trump met with Angela Merkel. He told Ms. Merkel, we can't isolate ourselves. We can't hide behind a wall. So he's arguing there against President Trump's signature project right before President Trump was going to meet with Angela Merkel. You've had Joe Biden encouraging China while President Trump tries to put pressure on China. So you could even see some kind of circumstances where the radical left works with the EU. These kind of pressures from within and without at the same time. You know, maybe you have President Trump claims victory. It's going through the courts. The media says Joe Biden's the real winner. Well, could you say get Germany and Emmanuel Macron and France and others come along and get involved and recognize Joe Biden as the victor? Say, well, we're going to treat him as the president. We're going to talk about President Joe Biden and not President Trump. Now, it's interesting to think about. Like I said, I'm not saying it's going to happen that way. But I am saying is all of these countries outside America are preparing for division and race riots in America, and they see that that could happen on November 4th. And the Bible says ultimately, like I said, there will be a lot of destruction within America. But then it talks about powers from without coming and taking America down, and it talks about a siege. Deuteronomy 28, God says, well, if you disobey me, you will be besieged in all your gates. And Mr. McDonald, in that article, he said, America is weak and bitterly divided already. This makes it extremely vulnerable for a foreign power to lay siege to it. So this division, it leaves America open to being besieged from without. You know, if America was strong and united, it could probably pull through, say, being cut off and blockaded from outside aid. But not with all the division. With the threat of terrorism and racial hatred, it is easy to see how the siege will lead to a third of America dying. This is what the Bible says. One third of the British people will die at the same time. And it goes through some of those things that we've talked about. And then the Bible talks about America being attacked. So you see many more people being destroyed in what comes after the election violence, in how foreign countries take advantage of the election violence. And in the Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet booklet, again, another great resource to go to learn more about this. Mr. Flurry covers this back to back. Chapter 4 is terrorism and race riots. And it has much more detail about the violence in America's cities. Again, another great place to go to learn more about this. And then the next chapter, chapter 5, Superpower Under Siege. And that chapter talks about Germany and China especially getting together. Isaiah chapter 23, it talks about a mart of nations, and it goes through and it talks about several nations. And you can, if you understand Bible prophecy and you can prove it from our writings, or from the material that we've put out and we'll go through and prove from scripture, it goes through the modern identities of these nations, and it's talking about basically the European Union getting together with China and Japan. They form a mart of nations, a trading bloc, and then you have these other scriptures that talk about America being besieged. They're cut out of world trade. And you see even that rising at the moment. This was a headline from Fox News. China sees Germany, Europe as entryway to continued march for global supremacy, report says. It was about a report from the Foundation of the Defense of Democracy. And this report says China sees Germany as the linchpin. The linchpin for what? As the linchpin to winning World War III. That's what this article is about. This article says if China, this Foundation for Defense of Democracies, they say if China can win Germany, it can win Europe, it can win the world. So China sees, well, if we can use Germany, we can win Europe, we can win the world. And this report kind of focused on China thinking that they can use Germany as a kind of naive tool to take advantage of Germany. And I can see why China would look at Germany right now and its current leadership and think that way. And maybe they are looking at Germany and its current leadership and thinking that way. But as Europe gets stronger, as you have a prophesied strongman rise in Germany, they're not going to just be able to kind of use Germany as a naive tool. But that calculus will remain. If China and Germany are together, they can win the world. So you can see how this is already leading to exactly the same alliance that the Bible prophesies will take down America. Exactly the same alliance that you can go and see that we've been writing about 10 years ago. Now, I remember Mr. Flurry talking about this Mart of Nations and this alliance between Germany and China, and nobody else in the world was talking about that 10 years ago, 2010. But within a year or two, they were. Within a year or two, trade between Germany and China was exploding. People started talking about a special relationship between Germany and China. Angela Merkel was visiting China more than any other foreign country. And then you've got this report where China sees Germany as the linchpin for control of the world. And so it's leading directly to that kind of alliance. And maybe the siege could even start with some of the same language you see right now in the Spiegel article. While the U.S. is being ruled by an illegitimate dictator, he refuses to step down. Well, we have to put trade sanctions on the U.S. until he steps down. I don't know. That's pure speculation. But you can see how the events of the Bible could come very easily out of what we're seeing in the news right now. So like I said, I'm not saying that there necessarily is going to be all of this happening right after the election. But I can say for sure that these powers outside America are watching and waiting for division and violence within America. Well, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about an anniversary that's taking place on this day that actually gives us the solution to this problem, that is full of hope for the division and the riots that is coming to America. And it shows us how America could solve this problem and about how we can solve these problems in our own lives and have a sure source of protection no matter what happens to the nation as a whole. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM and this is the Trumpet Daily. An exciting, pulsating, vital third of all the Bible is devoted to prophecy. And approximately 90% of all prophecy pertains to our time, now, in this 21st century. It is a warning to us, to our English-speaking peoples, of immediate life and death import. The prophecies come alive once their doors are opened by this now-discovered master key. The United States and Britain in prophecy will open, to open minds, this hitherto closed vital third of all the Bible. No story of fiction ever was so strange, so fascinating, so absorbing, so packed with interest and suspense as this gripping story of our identity and our ancestry. Request the United States and Britain in Prophecy and a free one-year subscription to the Trumpet magazine right now. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily radio show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. Now this day, October 21st, it's the anniversary of one of the most important decisive, world-changing battles ever. October 21st, 1805 is the date of this battle. And like I mentioned at the end of that first segment, that very long first segment, I guess, there's an important lesson from this battle that is very applicable to what our nations are going through today. And that battle is the Battle of Trafalgar. Battle between Britain and the French and Spanish navies, but a battle that was really all about who is going to dominate the seas, who is going to have the ability to transport troops anywhere in the world, who is going to be the next global empire. Will France be able to come and invade Great Britain or not? And then the consequences of that would have been huge. You know, if Britain had lost, well, yeah, maybe it would have been invaded. The Royal Navy wouldn't have been able to go on and wipe out slavery and stamp out the slave trade, as we talked about on this show a few months ago. And it was a critical time in world history. And Mr. Flurry, Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry, he talked about this battle in a 2002 article, The Law of History. And he quoted in this from Winston Churchill's book, A History of the English-Speaking Peoples. And he talked about what was going on here, about how at this point in 1805, Napoleon massed his invasion barges at Boulogne, believing, as Churchill wrote, that the British fleets were dispersed and that the moment had come for invasion. Mr. Flurry writes, the decisive battle took place in the waters off Cape Trafalgar, Spain. Nelson was outnumbered and outgunned. At daybreak on October 21st, and then he goes to quoting from Churchill, he saw from the quarterdeck of the Victory the battle line of the enemy, consisting of an advanced squadron of 12 Spanish ships and 21 French ships of the line under Villeneuve. Nelson signaled to his captain for the attack into two columns, and then Mr. Flurry said, then notice what he did. Nelson went down to his cabin to compose a prayer, Churchill wrote. May the great God whom I worship grant to my country and for the benefit of Europe and in general a great and glorious victory. For myself, I commit my life to him who made me, and may his blessing light upon my endeavors for serving my country faithfully. The fleets were drawing near, continued Churchill. Another signal was run up upon the victory. England expects every man will do his duty. A deathly silence fell upon the fleet as the ships drew near. Each captain marked down his adversary, and within a few minutes the two English columns thundered into action. And he goes through and talks about that battle. I don't really have time to go through all of the details of it. But as we all know, Britain won. Britain defeated the French Navy. And Nelson died in that battle. Wounded in that battle. And Mr. Flurry writes, this was one of the greatest sea battles in history. It saved the British Empire. It appeared that Captain Nelson was outnumbered and outgunned, but was he? He turned to God with a beautiful prayer. He committed his life to his Creator. Nelson sacrificed his life for the British Empire and God gave him the victory. How important is such a faithful example from our history books? What is the lesson of this inspiring leader? Will we learn from history? Or will America and Britain have to learn the hard way that God saves nations by being defeated, trusting ourselves instead of God? God saves nations. That is the lesson that we need to learn. And in the very next sentence, after Mr. Flurry finishes talking about Nelson, he says, most people don't realize how close we came to dividing this nation forever in the American Civil War. So he goes on to talk about the Civil War, to talk about Abraham Lincoln. Because it's the same lesson. How do you save a nation that's heading for civil war? The same way that battle was won, by turning to God in prayer. And he talks about Lincoln calling for fasting and prayer, like you've heard from Mr. Stephen Flurry on this show. This is how America was saved, Mr. Flurry writes. Can our college students learn from such history? The fate of our nation depends on it. We talked in the first half about a coming siege. Well, this siege is in many ways a reverse of what happened at Trafalgar. You know, on that day, God gave the descendants of Israel control of the seas. And more went into it than that. There was a lot of time of preparation and accumulation of sea gates, of other blessings. But in a lot of ways, Trafalgar was the concluding moment, the decisive point where Britain dominated the waves, and then that transition to an American domination of the waves. And that time ends with the siege. Israel loses dominion of the waves. Other nations use them to besiege Britain and America. Well, if we go back and look at how did that domination of the waves start, well, we can see the solution to avoid being destroyed in a siege. It starts with prayer. And if you go all the way back to how that domination starts, well, it really goes all the way back to Abraham in the book of Genesis. And you see an even more fantastic example of prayer and faith. That's the solution for nations. But it's also the solution for individuals. You know, not paying £1,000 a year and being a member of a society so you can go into a bunker and hide out in election violence. The real solution is this, you know, prayer, faith in God, believing what God says and acting on that faith, obeying. It's a profound and practical solution. You know, prayer, just to look at that one thing, we have a book, How to Pray. And that is so much practical help that you can apply to get through and to prosper in this time. A free book you can get from our website, thetrumpet.com. You know, we can think, well, yeah, I pray, but do you really break through to God? And that book talks about how we can have detailed, active prayers, prayers that last a substantial amount of time, where we're really talking to God and getting him involved in our lives. That's what we need for our nation, but that's the solution individually as well. So please do, if you haven't read that book, it's a fantastic book, How to Pray. You can get that on our website, thetrumpet.com, along with all of the rest of our material. It's such a practical, like I said, solution for our nations and for individuals. Well, that's about it for today. I believe Mr. Stephen Fleury will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, please do shoot us an email at td@kpcg.fm if you want to get in touch. You can keep listening to us at td@kpc, or you can watch the show at, kpcg.fm. There we go. On a 101.3 on the FM dial.